Hello, welcome back to the Funds Fanatic podcast. My name's Gavin Lumsden. I'm editor of Investment Trust Insider at CityWire. And with me is my colleague, Daniel Grote, editor of CityWire Funds Insider. Each week, we chew the cud on what's going on, the big things going on in the world of collective investments and what we think investors like you might need to know about. Dan, good to hear from you again. We're going to talk about Hargreaves Lansdown and its very influential Wealth 50 buy list. Hargreaves Lansdown, as everybody probably knows, is the country's biggest stockbroker and funds supermarket. And its Wealth 50 buy list is very influential in terms of influencing the funds that investors buy. And if funds get on that buy list, then they tend to attract a lot more money than they would have done otherwise. There's a story in the Sunday Times, wasn't there, last weekend, going back a bit now, but it stuck with us all week, really, isn't it? Reminding us that that changes are afoot at the Wealth 50. What did it say, Dan?
Yeah, well, Hargreaves had sort of said at the beginning of the year that it was going to overhaul its Wealth 50 buy list, really in the wake of the criticism that it had attracted following the scandal of the Neil Woodford funds, which were on that list and dropped when the fund was suspended, and yeah, the Sunday Times over the weekend giving the new name of the shortlist. It's going to be called the Wealth Shortlist, and a bit of detail.
So no number on it this time.
No, well, I mean, the problem with the number had been that it never was the number it said. I mean, they had the Wealth 150. And that
Wealth 150. How many were Wealth 50? There's about 80, 70, 60. Yeah.
Certainly dropped below 100. And with the, I mean, when they launched the Wealth 50, it had more than 50 funds on it. That's now come down to 54. But it's probably a wise move not to have a number on it, given that they're having to chop and change all the time.
You know, Hargreaves has always made, you know, these buy lists are useful things. Hargreaves isn't the only one that does it. It's just the most prominent and then the biggest and probably the most influential. Like I said, there are thousands of funds out there. So the fact that someone goes to the effort to come up with a short list of ones that people can consider as a bit of a shortcut, you know, is a really useful thing to do. But there's always been suspicion around such buy lists. And in Hargreaves' case, as you said, the fact that they kept Woodford Equity Income on that buy list, even as the fund was, you know, its performance was getting worse and worse. And was it on the buy list all the way up to the end, or did they take it off just in time?
No, they took it off after it was suspended, on the day that it was suspended, essentially. The fund got suspended. It was in the afternoon, and Hargreaves announced that they'd taken it off the list in the evening. So they really were kind of forced into doing that by events.
Right, and it's good for people to stick by their convictions and with funds, as our listeners will know. It's difficult to know when to call time on an underperforming fund. You know, if you're investing in an actively managed fund, you don't expect the fund manager to deliver consistent returns year in, year out. You're looking for long-term performance, and you know that can come with a few duff years. But obviously, Woodford went horribly wrong, and Hargreaves didn't shift. But let's talk about what the issues were around the Wealth 50, because Hargreaves were always having to bat off accusations that they were, that their list was reflecting commercial considerations. And it did seem that most of the funds on there just were ones where they'd arranged a discount, where the annual management charge was cheaper if you bought it through Hargreaves.
Well, I guess their argument has always been that they pick funds for their buy list based on based on their judgment as to which funds are going to do well. But allied with that are these discounts that it does secure. That is part of the process. You know, they will talk about that being their job, really, as a, call them a discount broker. It's securing sort of discounts for their investors. So they will knock off a percentage from the fund's ongoing charges figure, which will then mean that Hargreaves Lansdown customers can get the fund a little bit cheaper. And you know, it isn't able to secure these discounts across all the, you know, hundreds and thousands of funds that it has on its platform. These discounts are kind of most notable in the funds that, that feature in its buy list.
Yes, and I guess you know, Hargreaves has got a point in saying, you know, they're not putting any old fund on the buy list that agrees to do a discount for its charges. You know, they're just doing deals with funds that they think are really good, and so therefore they're saying, you know, they're giving investors an even better deal. But going forward, do we expect the list to be have, you know, fewer sort of discount type deals in evidence? Is that, are they going to make it less of a connection between you know, the deals they've struck with groups and fund managers?
Well, again, you can look at it in both sides, can't you? On the one hand, as you said, they're not just putting anything they can get a discount on into the Wealth 50, but equally, every fund in the Wealth 50 has a discount on. So, it, you know, if a fund is very good and isn't prepared to offer that discount to Hargreaves, you know, to date they haven't put it on the Wealth 50. And you know, the most obvious example of that is Fundsmith Equity. That's been an extremely good performer. It's an extremely popular fund. It's the UK's biggest fund. But fund manager Terry Smith has been vocal in his opposition to offering Hargreaves Lansdowne a discount. And you know, Hargreaves have always said that you know, it's a performance decision that they've made. I mean, the argument that they always used to make was that you know, Terry Smith's fund, which was launched in 2010, hadn't built a long enough track record and specifically hadn't been through a stock market crash that would allow them to make a judgment call about, you know, his management style and whether that's the strong performance that he delivers, whether that's going to be long lasting. Yeah, that argument, I mean, we're still in the middle of the coronavirus crisis and stock markets have fallen and then rebounded, and we don't know what's going to happen in the coming months. But certainly so far in the coronavirus crash, Fundsmith has done relatively well. So that argument maybe carries a little bit less weight.
So do you think Hargreaves may have had to eat some humble pie and go to Terry Smith and say, oh, go on then, you can join our list. You've proved yourself. You've done quite well, Terry.
Well, I mean, the other thing about it is that they now do have a very big Linzel train-shaped hole in their buy list. So that was, you know, what they used to be able to point to when they would attract criticism about not having Fundsmith in their list was that, well, they had Linzel Train Global Equity, which had done as well. Now they don't, because that fund and Linzel Train UK Equity were cut out of the list last year because of their growing stakes in Hargreaves Lansdowne's own shares. So that is something they need to address. They don't have a global superstar anymore.
Nick Train and at his firm, or Nick Train himself, really, the fund manager, owns about 13% of Hargreaves. Is that right?
Yeah, and he went up to that. He's been buying more and more because he went up to the 13% level last month.
Now, both sides say there's absolutely no connection between, you know, whether Linzel Train funds are in the Hargreaves Best Buy list and the fact that Linzel Train is a biggest or leading shareholder in the company. But Hargreaves, in the wake of the Woodford scandal, were wanting to make sure that they were squeaky clean. There was no room for confusion. Is that right? So they took those funds off Linzel Train. It took the two Linzel Train funds off the platform. And do you remember that had a massive impact on an investment trust, confusingly called Linzel Train as well. Linzel Train Investment Trust, not Linzel Train Limited, which is the name of Nick Train's private fund management business. But I don't know if you know about Linzel Train Investment Trust, but it's actually one of the best performing equity investment trusts in the UK. Extraordinary track record, because it's got you know, the benefit of Nick Train stock picking and the investment style that's done so well that you can see in his open-ended funds and indeed in the Finsbury Growth Investment Trust he also runs. But it, unlike these other funds, it also had a big stake in his private company, and there's been lots of speculation about the value of that company, and essentially the value has been going up and up and up because his business has been doing so well and the funds have been getting bigger and bigger and attracting more money. But when Hargreaves, it was over a year ago now, wasn't it? But when Hargreaves took the open-ended funds, the Lindsay Trane funds off the platform, it had an immediate impact on the Lindsay Trane Investment Trust share price, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I guess the fear was...
absolutely slumped.
Yeah, and when Hargreaves did take the Lindsay Trane funds off its buy list, it was very explicit in that it wasn't a performance issue. It wasn't taking them off because they're failing to deliver the objectives that they'd sort of envisaged for that fund. It was simply to do with the fact that the fund manager owned a lot of Hargreaves Lansdown shares. And I guess the fear that was reflected in the response of the Lindsay Trane Investment Trust share price was that would nevertheless spark outflows from the two main funds, Lindsay Trane Global Equity and Lindsay Trane UK Equity. I mean, there have been outflows in the second half of last year, but not huge ones, and not ones that were seen in the immediate aftermath of Hargreaves' decision. The UK Equity Fund it was downgraded by Morningstar over the sort of concentration of its stakes. The Global Equity Fund, it was up substantially last year, but slightly lagged the global stock market. So, it's not really clear what's been driven those outflows, and it's certainly not clear that Hargreaves' decision has driven those outflows. But you mentioned the Lindsay Trane Investment Trust, and obviously that's the other sort of big gap in the World 50, isn't it? That it doesn't have any investment trusts.
No, it's an absolute glaring error. It would be amazing if they could. I think an acid test, actually, of any shake-up or reform that they're planning would be that they did include some investment trusts in the lineup. I mean, not something like Lindsay Trane, which is a very strange investment trust, but demand for its shares can push them up to extraordinary premiums above the actual underlying asset value, and which is one reason why when they took the Lindsay Trane funds off the platform, at the time the shares were very, very highly rated. There was a bubble in them, basically. And any hint that the Lindsay Trane business might not be worth as much going forward knocked those shares, and they tumbled so quickly because they were on such a high premium. They were worth double their net asset value at one point. So, the Hargreaves move burst the bubble there. But, and it's had a bad 12 months since the long-term performance of those shares. It's very good, as I said. But over 12 months, it's in negative territory. But it's back again now at a 20% premium. So it's a racy trust, and probably, a bit too volatile and a bit small, actually, for the best buy list. Because Hargreaves have always said they don't, they like investment trusts. They've got, they're an important part of their business and everything. They people can buy investment trusts through their platform, obviously. But investment trusts shares can be illiquid or difficult to trade. And, if they're going to be putting it on a mass market platform like theirs, or encouraging people to buy it, they want to make sure that it's possible for big numbers of people to get in and out of the stock. And, that liquidity argument is quite valid. But there are one or two investment trusts, big ones, whose performance is good, who would, probably merit inclusion. Probably no prizes for guessing that I might mention, Scottish Mortgage Trust is now, it's an equity investment trust with a good track record, very identifiable style, run by Bailey Gifford. It's listed in the FTSE 100. It's like got at market value of £8 or £9 billion. And there's a lot of liquidity, a lot of dealing going on those shares every day. So you'd think it's got the capacity to survive. And then on the best buy list. And I'd also chuck in there private equity giant 3i, one of the most liquid shares on the market, I think. So I think, it would be really good to see if they've considered putting those in there, just because, if you're interested in private equity, then 3i is something you've got to consider. And, Scottish Mortgage is not for everyone, of course. But, it's definitely got a good track record and is now a very big, substantial fund. So we'll see, won't we?
Well, I guess their point that, if they were tipping sort of tiny investment trust that, I guess it's not just a liquidity thing, but also a market distortion thing, that if they stick it in the list, then it will zoomed to a premium. And I guess, you know, we do see that with, you know, if a trust gets tipped in the Telegraph's Questa column, there's an immediate response the next day. So you'd imagine you'd sort of see something similar with them if they're on Hargreaves' list. But yeah, the one, you know, in terms of the ones you mentioned, I mean, you know, they can hardly say that Scottish Mortgage is too small to stick on their list. It's bigger than Hargreaves Lansdown, the company. Scottish Mortgage is pushing on a 10 billion market cap. Hargreaves is on 7. So yeah, that size argument certainly doesn't work.
Not anymore. So I hadn't spotted that. So is that just because Bidley Hargreaves shares have been having a difficult time as a financial stock? Is that do you think?
Yeah,
I mean, Scottish Mortgage shares have been benefiting from the rise in Amazon and then Tesla and such like.
Yeah, I'll confess, I didn't know that off the top of my head. I just looked at it while we were talking.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's a good way to bring us into, you know, talking about sort of, you know, how markets have been and you know, what investors are doing, because, you know, it's been a rotten year. It still has been a bad year for investors. But markets have rebounded very strongly since their lows in mid-March, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, and we've seen evidence this week of the extent to which fund investors have responded to that, because we had huge inflows into UK funds in April. This is based on figures provided by Calastone, which is a fund settlement service. So it kind of sees a lot of the trades coming through into and out of UK funds. It doesn't see the entire market. So it is an estimate, but it is a pretty good gauge nonetheless of this rebound in confidence as markets enjoyed, you know, one of their best months in years. I mean, the S&P 500 had its best month since January 1987 last month. Global stock markets rallied by the most they had since 2011. Fund buyers have responded. And those huge outflows that we saw in March, and particularly from bond funds, but also from active equity funds. Passive equity funds actually held up pretty well. In April, we did see a big recovery and almost a complete reversal of those outflows in active equity funds. So Fundsmith had its biggest inflow in its entire history. That's now sort of nearly a decade. Lindsay Crane funds were in demand, and particularly technology funds were in demand, given the performance of the likes of Amazon.
Do you think, Dan, that is that people who had panicked and pulled out when markets were falling so alarmingly and then are going back in? Or is it new investors coming in with new money, you know, reallocating, reorganising their asset allocation?
Well, I guess that's the frustrating thing about these figures, isn't it? Is that you see the figures, but you don't know the sort of emotions and the decisions that have driven them. I think probably what you can say with active equity funds is that they do reflect that fear and then optimism much more than passive funds. I think with passive funds, you have the impact of long-term sort of savings plans and, you know, people who've just set up a direct debit to put a certain amount in every month. And obviously, you know, they exist for active funds as well. The active market does seem to be more susceptible to the sort of big swings in sentiment that we see in the stock market. I think it's probably fair to say that it is genuine, whether it's optimism and thinking that the coronavirus issue has passed, or, you know, if it's just fear of missing out, that, you know, if you see stock markets racing higher and higher, you know, especially if you sold out as stock markets were falling, you know, that you might just be right. I've got to get back in now.
Yeah, and then markets had got so cheap. I mean, the challenge we're facing with coronavirus and the business interruptions and the recession that's looming are really quite alarming. But you know, it will pass, and you know, markets are always forward looking, etc. So things had got very, very cheap, and the rally. I haven't, you know, personally, I think I'm going to be having another look at my pension, our company pension that is with Hargreaves, by the way, for purposes of disclosure. I might be doing that this weekend, because in fact the hit from the crash was really nasty. I try not to panic, try not to do knee-jerk reactions. But actually, with the rebound, it does give you a chance to kind of maybe not sell at the bottom, but maybe look at things and think about what you're holding and really are these things well positioned now? Because I might have mentioned last time I moved into UK sort of trusts after the election, and that's been a lot of those, as we discussed last time, have got really badly hit. Now they're recovering, so I'm wondering whether it's the time to reduce some of the stakes in them and put the money elsewhere, maybe overseas again. I'm not sure. What do you reckon?
Well, I guess the issue with markets at the moment is they fell a lot, and in the sense that they were lower than they were before, they were cheap. But in the sense of if you're talking about cheapness in in price earnings ratios. The problem we've got at the moment is we don't know what the E is. We don't know what the earnings are, because so many companies are refusing to give guidance as they normally would as to what their earnings might be in the coming months, because there's just so much uncertainty.
They've got no idea. Yeah, they're not being deceptive. They just don't know what's going on.
Well, they don't know how long we're going to be in lockdown for. And, that's obviously having a huge impact on huge proportions of the stock market and their ability to do the business that they would normally do. So they just can't say what their prospects are likely to be. So in terms of pricing of shares, if it's a multiple of earnings, well, if you don't know what the earnings are, then are they cheap? Are they expensive? We don't really know.
Actually, on that note, investment trust share prices sort of have something to say about that in a way. So the average discount on investment trusts fell to around nearly 20% towards the end of March, when markets were at their lows. So that's really quite extreme discount. In other words, the shares trading 20%, but on average across the board below their underlying net asset value. And those discounts, that's a very broad average across all sorts of sectors and different types of trusts, but that has now narrowed to around 8%. So that's still quite wide, actually. But 8% indicates there's still caution out there, but it shows there's been quite a re-rating as well.
I mean, I guess one thing that investors might look to in the sort of situation that we're in is, what are the big, well-respected investors doing? And in the UK, Terry Smith, he's the biggest fund manager in this country, and he's just gone out and bought Nike and Starbucks. So
yeah, but it takes two to make a market. He's buying, isn't he? But Warren Buffett isn't.
Well, yeah, that's the point, isn't it? That in the most famous investor in the world isn't buying stuff at the moment. He's selling stuff. He's selling his airlines because of the obvious difficulties that industry faces. And unlike in the financial crisis in 2008, when he was an active buyer, he's not really spending money. And I guess one of the reasons for that is because we've had this huge stimulus from governments and central banks, but primarily from the Federal Reserve in the US, is that's propping up companies. Companies aren't getting to the sort of distress levels that he leapt upon in the financial crisis. So he doesn't think things are cheap enough.
Yes, well, it's a very interesting stance, isn't it? And we should really take a cue from what they're both doing. But on the not being convinced by the rally, I mean, there are the likes of, I'm just looking at the investment trust sort of share prices and for today's weekly Trust Watch column. And, there's a fund called Ruffer Investment Company, a very defensive capital preservation investment trust. And it and others in its, other peers like it, Capital Gearing Trust, have been done very well. They've this year they've actually avoided the big falls and have done the job in preserving shareholders' money. And their thesis, which they broadly sort of share, is that this massive stimulus from central banks like the Bank of England and all the money printing and the quantitative easing and now with the coronavirus, the enormous support that the government is giving, with millions of people's salaries, wages being paid temporarily by the government. You know, we're spending as much on that at the moment on the furlough scheme as the NHS, for example. So these investors are, you know, not saying that that shouldn't be done necessarily, but just saying that it is showing how the monetary experimentation that we saw after the financial crisis in 2008, with all the money printing, we're doing more and more and more of that, and it's going to eventually, they believe, lead it to higher inflation, because, you know, the authorities realise that's the only way to reduce what are increasingly enormous debts, is to have some inflation. Of course, that's not showing up in the figures, and there are plenty of people to say no, that they're wrong. But you know, it is worth considering just what extraordinary territory we've entered into with central banks.
Well, I guess just intuitively, it's quite hard to deal with this issue of higher inflation at the moment, isn't it? Because it just doesn't feel like an inflationary environment. It feels quite the opposite because of the lockdown and because the grinding to a halt of global economies. But nevertheless, that, you know, that is something that could well be further down the line.
Yeah, it could be. In the meantime, I'm looking at this the cheap buy list of for investment trusts, and I'm not saying it's time to buy them at all, but it is striking at the moment that the things that are looking cheap are property trusts. There's and Asia trusts. And now Asia's interesting, don't you think? Because you know, the people saying that I think we touched on it last time as well. Oh God, we're in danger of repeating ourselves. But you know, Asia was first into the crisis, and maybe it's first to come out. But you can see investment trusts like Schroder, Asia Pacific, trading on wider discounts than normal. So, you know, this could be a good time to be looking at them if you're interested in that region. And the property, I feel, you know, property, the news and property is so bad at the moment, with lots of tenants not able to pay their rents, and with investment trusts either reducing or suspending their dividends. But, you know, at some point, these shares, which are now trading on quite big discounts, will present a buying opportunity, I'm sure. It's just knowing when to time it. I'm not calling it. I'm just saying they're beginning to look really cheap.
Well, and if you want to buy property, then that's the only way to do it, isn't it? Because you can't buy an open-ended property fund at the moment. Buying property through funds, it is.
Yes, that's right. Because you can't even buy the property funds. Not just a question of their dividends being suspended. You can't put money into them or take money out. Whereas the investment trusts, the shares might be battered, but they're still always available to buy and sell. So that's always a good point to remember in these difficult times. Well, Dan, that feels like we've kind of gone around the houses and covered everything. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And we're literally ending with property. So we've certainly gone around the houses.
Boom, boom. Very good.